255. And remember, the just shall live by faith.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Grismire. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you of the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Paul Williams, who's really an investigative journalist. He has written some wonderful books about what's going on, and you'll be fascinated by what you're going to learn tonight. But before we get to the program, I want to talk a little bit about the flu season. The flu season is upon us, so they're telling you to, oh, get your vaccines, it's running out, but you still have time to get a vaccine shot. And ladies and gentlemen, probably the worst thing you could possibly do is get a vaccine shot. I mean, a lot of the people who take the vaccine shots get the flu, and a lot of people who don't take the vaccine shots don't get the flu. Why do we get the flu in the wintertime? Why? Very simply, because you don't get the amount of sun. We get flu in the winter because the sun certainly is not giving the amount of radiation that we need, not producing the amount of vitamin D that we need, and our immune system begins to slump. That's why we get the flu in the wintertime. And, of course, you go into the southern hemisphere, and it's exactly the same thing. When it's winter here, it's summer there, and when we are certainly don't have the flu in the summer, why they get the flu in the wintertime? Because they don't get the sun exposure. You should be taking large amounts of vitamin D, probably 10,000 units a day during this time of year, 5,000 in the summertime and 10,000. And you ought to be taking other things to boost your immune system. And you certainly, the last thing you want is the flu shot. Most of them contain mercury. They contain all sorts of things that will produce infertility and cancer, and they're just not good for you. And if you look at the people who take flu shots and take vaccines, and you don't compare them with those who don't are far healthier. There's a new release, and you can get it on Prison Planet. And just type in Prison Planet. Children unvaccinated healthier than children vaccinated. And you'll find out that the German study has recently come out and said that children who are not vaccinated are 5 times healthier. 5 times, not 5%, not 50%, 5 times healthier than those who are vaccinated. And now they're trying to get you to take the vaccines. Well, right now we've got a special guest, Paul Williams, and Paul has been studying what's going on as far as the radical Islamic movement in the United States. Now, our attention is being focused on all sorts of unimportant things. You have to understand they know how to manipulate us. But, of course, what you really need to understand is that there are Islamic training camps here in America where they're training ex-felons with automatic weapons, which, of course, is against the law. No felon is supposed to have a weapon, much less an automatic weapon, but this is going on with the full knowledge of our own government. And, of course, we are creating, once again, the best enemy money can buy, but you don't want to hear me talk about it. Paul, why don't you pick up the story?
Well, I like to hear you talk about it, Dr. Stan. I mean, you do a great job. Dealing with Islam in the United States, it's a very new development. President Obama said that Islam has always been a part of our history, but that's not true. If you go back and if you look, go through the records at, some people like to say that a guy by the name of Mehmet, the father of Uncas, was a Muslim because he has the name Mehmet, which sounds like Muhammad. And that's the type of reasoning that people give for the existence of any Muslim in the country before the 1920s. The reality of the situation is that during the Civil War, there wasn't one Muslim serving in the Union Army or one Muslim serving in the Confederate Army. The one person that's mentioned in history as being a Muslim serving during the Civil War, Nicholas Said, in his autobiography...
Hold that thought, we'll be right...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
You may have heard about the 90 essential nutrients or the Mighty 90 needed for good health. But with all the products out there, what exactly are they talking about? The Mighty 90 is 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 60 plant-derived minerals, and 2 essential fatty acids. So, now you know. But with all the products you see and hear advertised, what exactly do you buy to come up with the Mighty 90 and the right ratios to promote good health? Youngevity has made it easy with the Healthy Start Pack, which contains one canister of Beyond Tangy Tangerine Vitamin and Plant-Derived Mineral Complex, one bottle of Bone and Joint Enriching OsteoFX Plus, and one bottle of EFA Plus Essential Fatty Acids, all in the proper ratios to promote good health and vitality. For more information or to order, call 1-800-991-8730. That's 1-800-991-8730 and ask about business opportunities.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-dried guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Paul was simply saying that studying the history of the Muslim faith in America, that there was only one Muslim soldier during the Second World War. That was all that they could find, just one. It really wasn't until about 1965 when they changed the Immigration Act because of those who wanted to change America. You must understand that most Americans like America as it is, but they're those who believe in a world government. They're globalists. They want a multicultural, multilingual society. And they realize, of course, that by bringing in people of other faiths and other races, they can create all sorts of dissent and fighting back and forth here in this country. That's what they want. And out of the chaos, then, of course, they will advance their cause and their goal. So basically, the 1965 immigration law began to transform America. Our guest is Paul Williams. Paul, pick up the story.
Well, you're right on target there. The quota system was put in place in 1924. And it limited the flow of immigrants to 2% of the population of each nationality that was present in the country. That meant that, by and large, the immigrants who could come here were from Western Europe. And it also meant that, since there were no Muslims here, that no Muslims could come here. And that was the law of the land. And it, once again, it was changed in 1965. Before that time, diversity was not a virtue. As a matter of fact, the New York Times, when the quota system was upheld by the McCarran-Walter Act of 1952, when it was upheld the second time, the New York Times wrote, "It is both wise and prudent that the American race wishes to preserve its unity." That was the New York Times. And when he ran for office in 1958, JFK said, "There's a legitimate argument for some limitation upon immigration." While his brother in 1965 with LBJ and the neocons in Congress and in Senate decided to change all that. The quota system was done away with because it was unfair to the third world and to people in the third world who were of a different race.
Well, now that was really primarily Teddy Kennedy, wasn't it? Because
exactly.
I remember Teddy Kennedy saying, "I guarantee this new legislation will not change the demographic makeup of America. I promise you that." Well,
yes,
Ted Kennedy was a liar, as was both of his brothers, and that's
exactly.
What happened. Exactly. Go ahead.
Exactly. And it's great that you remember that. Teddy Kennedy swore to the American people the legislation will have no impact, that the cities, our cities will not be flooded with immigrants. And 4 years after the passage of the Hart-Celler Act, the first waves of Muslims began to inundate our shores. And they primarily were Palestinians. And they came in the wake of the Six-Day War. And in 1969, right in the wake of that war, when that war was raging, about 14,000 Palestinians came. And they settled in Chicago, Detroit, Cleveland, San Fran, Houston, Jacksonville, New York. And during the same time, about 1978, Yemen gained its independence from Great Britain, and there was civil strife there, and a lot of Yemenis came over, about 5,000 during that same time. We're talking 1969. This was the first wave of Islamic immigration. In Dearborn, the Palestinians opened the Dix Mosque, and a lot of these people who came here, the Palestinians were much more industrious. They opened 64% of them, for instance, went to retail and opened their own businesses, including grocery stores. The Yemenis, by and large, were uneducated, and they ended up working as farm laborers and then the car industry. Now, at the same time that this passage of this Hart-Celler bill, and with the first waves of immigrants coming into the country, 1971, we had the oil embargo, which was an act of war by Saudi Arabia against us. And as a result of that war, the Saudis became infinitely wealthier than they are now. Their profits soared from $1 billion a year to $100 billion a year. This is going back in the early 70s during the Nixon administration. And with this money pouring into Saudi Arabia, they started to fund the Muslim Student Association throughout the United States. They poured in over $100 billion for Islamic missionaries to come here and for mosques to be established throughout the country. They sent Tablighi Jamaat missionaries who were very radical. They were the first Islamic missionaries to come here, and they came here once again right in the wake of the oil embargo of 1973, when the first one, the guy by the name of Mafis Makbud, arrived in Brooklyn, and he worked, he was sent here because there was so much strife among the African-American community, the so-called black community, and the Nation of Islam, which had nothing to do with Orthodox Islam, was attracting so many adherents from the black community that he went there to convert the members of the black community, members of the Nation of Islam, to Orthodox Islam. He went to the State Street Mosque first, and he was very successful. He gathered a group of several hundred of black Muslims and started the Yassin Mosque. And from that came a street gang. And this was really the beginning of all the trouble, known as Dar al-Islam. And it arose in Brooklyn. It was funded by the Saudis. The members of Dar al-Islam were called the Dar. They wore Islamic attire. They married several women. They were very violent, and they ended up being like the baddest boys on the block in Brooklyn. And they controlled their own turf. And cells of the Dar popped up in Akron, Pittsburgh, Atlanta, Dallas, San Antonio, Durham, Raleigh, L.A., Columbia, Washington, D.C., throughout the country. Well, members of the Dar, since they were so violent, ended up being arrested for all kinds of crimes. Murder, attempted murder, aggravated assault, breaking and entering, firebombing. A lot of them ended up in New York prisons, including a prison called Greenhaven, which is not too far from where I live. And since these black Muslims got into the prison system, they insisted on establishing their own mosque. A mosque within a prison. This was a new idea. You can't have a Catholic church in a prison. That just set aside. You cannot have a Pentecostal congregation within a prison. You can't have a Baptist church or anything like it within the prison. But somehow, since these people were acting up so much and so violent, and we're talking in the wake of Attica, that concessions were made, and a mosque was established. It was called Majid Sankore in Greenhaven, in the Greenhaven prison in New York State. The Muslims there insisted on having their own imam who came in, their own speakers who came in.
But didn't the imams actually come from the Muslim countries and were financed by the Muslim countries?
Yes.
Coming into our prisons, and of course then now they began to recruit from the black community in the prisons. Go ahead.
Right. Well, and not only that, but they insisted on their own kitchen, their own halal meals. They said that since they're Muslims, they are exempt from work detail during the month of Ramadan. They said that five times a day they have to be exempted from any type of duty or any type of detail in order to pray. And anybody who was a black at that time and sent to prison and did not gravitate toward Islam and the black movement in the prison system was crazy. Because they offered you protection, better food, better diet, freedom from work, freedom from any type of detail five times a day. Once again, separate meals, separate facilities. They insisted on being segregated from all other prisoners. They could not, get this, Dr. Stan, they could not be subjected at any time to body searches. Never. You couldn't touch them because it was against their religion. Of course, you could do it to Christians and Jewish guys in the slammer, but not the Muslim. So they became the couriers of the drug trade in the prison system, and they benefited very well there. But the Dar, that Majid Sankore was so successful that other mosques started to pop up in Attica, Auburn, Clinton, Great Meadows, Five Points, Sing Sing, Southport, every other prison in New York State. And from there, every other prison throughout the United States. And what was interesting is, once the Saudis realized how successful this prison ministry was and how successful the Dar was within the prison system, they started to funnel millions and millions and millions of dollars into the Muslim prison ministry to such an extent that right now 90% of the converts to Islam in the United States are African American, and 60% of them are converted in prison.
And of course the thing is that if a Christian were to go to to Saudi Arabia and be seen publicly wearing a cross or something, where they would get into all sorts of problems. They do not allow Christian churches over there. But the Saudis, of course, are certainly using our laws to allow the mosques to be set up in the prisons and all across the country. But not only that, as of course Paul's going to tell you later on, there are all sorts of Islamic terrorist training camps, armed training camps, automatic weapons in those training camps, all across America. The fact that you're not hearing about this is because the media in America is controlled by six major corporations that tie into the Brotherhood of Darkness, and you better find out what's really going on. This is why, of course, we have Paul on, and basically he's come out with another great book. I'm looking forward to Crescent Moon Rising, I think is the title, and yes, it'll be out later this month. We'll be back.
It's out on Monday.
Cool. We'll be right back.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Americans love pills. America's 40 million seniors will have consumed 1.6 trillion pills during their lifetime, not counting vitamin pills. This is health journalist Bill Sardi. Americans are living longer an additional 18 years after they reach age 65. How will senior Americans spend that time? You've got it. Taking more and more pills to treat more and more disease. We need a better approach. How about a pill that promotes health rather than treats disease? That's where a pill I formulated comes in. It's called Longevinix, and it's a well-tested combination of herbs and vitamins proven to trigger genes activated by a limited-calorie diet, even mimicking physical exercise. Longevinix promotes healthy vision, heart pumping, immune response, blood clotting, and even mood. Call 1-866-405-4000 to order today. Healthy aging. Longevinix. Get started before you grow old. Call now. 1-866-405-4000. 405-4000.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Do you enjoy cooking? Would you like to learn the culinary secret that Barbara uses to enhance the flavor of Dr. Stan's food? Who's Barbara? She's Dr. Stan's wife. And what's her secret? She uses the delicious spices produced by Old Westport Spice and Trading Company. After using and enjoying their products for almost 20 years, Dr. Stan and Barbara decided they should offer their favorites to you. If you would like to please your family and enhance the flavor of your food, call 800-544-8927. That's 800-544-8927. I suggest you call today. Once again, the telephone number is 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and a lot of names here. They kind of get a little confusing, and you're going to have to hear these talks several times. There's one fellow named Gulen. He has some $35 billion. He leads a lot of this radical Islamic movement. He was actually expelled from Turkey. The FBI didn't want to bring him into the United States. Now, the State Department wouldn't bring him in because he's a radical troublemaker with $35 billion coming from drug money. But, of course, the CIA got him in here, and he has an enclave in Pennsylvania, and he was responsible for the overthrow of the Turkish government and bringing them under the control of the radical Muslim Brotherhood, which they are today. Then there's a fellow named Gianni. Did I pronounce it right?
Jelani.
Jelani is, don't get Gulen's Jelani mixed up. But, of course, Jelani actually heads the major component. There's two parts of Islamic movement in America. They call it the Dar. And certainly one of them certainly has to do with certainly an organization headed by H. Rapp Brown. And H. Rapp Brown's in prison. But that's all right. He heads this massive Islamic movement here in the United States. And the other is headed by Jelani. And, of course, this one has to do with setting up enclaves all across America, setting up areas, certainly in our major cities, that are Muslim. And you don't go in there. You can't have a business in there. They're all Muslim businesses. And they have Sharia law in these portions of the cities. And basically, even the police many times are afraid to go into these regions. We're talking not something theoretical, but very real. Go right ahead, Paul.
It sounds, you know, unless you're in Philadelphia and you've been there, and in my book I have photographs of that enclave in Philadelphia, or unless you've gone to Brooklyn and seen these Yassin mosques, unless you've been to places like I've been to these places like Islamabad that I'm talking about, I've been there. I've been into these paramilitary compounds, and Jelani established the first one there. Once again, that's the second offshoot of the Dar. The first was the National Ummah Movement. The second, and I know this is confusing, the second is Jamaat al-Fukra. Now, Jamaat al-Fukra, let's understand this, that they were responsible for the assassination of Rabbi Kahani, for the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center. Richard Reed, the shoe bomber, was a member of Jamaat al-Fukra. The Beltway snipers were affiliated with Jamaat al-Fukra.
And I just point out, if this is true, why don't we hear about it, ladies and gentlemen? Because they don't want you to hear about it. The purpose of our media is not to reveal what's going on, but to conceal it. And unfortunately, if you don't understand the media's control, then you have no idea what's taking place. Go right ahead, Paul.
Well, you realize all this, that Jamaat al-Fukra has established paramilitary compounds, first in Islamabad. I've been there. Their bodies buried there. If you go there, there are obstacle courses. It's like going back to basic training.
And don't they actually have automatic weapons there?
Fully automatic weapons. They have Kalashnikovs, AK-47s. You won't see that. And I know a difference between a Kalashnikov and a semi-automatic. They're both there. Shotguns, handguns of every sort and description.
And this, ladies and gentlemen, this is one reason why we need to keep our weapons, because our government is fostering these. I should not say that our government is the Brotherhood of Darkness. It's not our government. It's their government. But it's fostering this radical form of Islam here. And who's going to defend you and your family when these things are turned loose on our society? These people are felons. The majority of them are. So what are they doing with automatic weapons? The FBI knows all about this. But if you work for the FBI, you would not dare come forward and tell the truth. Or you might end up certainly like so many of the other people who worked for the government and dared to come forward and tell the truth. Go right ahead.
Well, like I said, the first compound was at Islamabad. At Islamabad, if you go there now, today, it's up by Hancock, New York, between Hancock and Dover, right there at the cusp of New York and Pennsylvania. Very, very close to the reservoir that feeds New York City. But at Islamabad, you will notice that the entire place is all these really run-down, rusty old trailers. And you would, somebody would walk through that and think that, oh, this is like a flooded out trailer camp, but it's not. The training, there are obstacle courses that are above ground, but most of the training takes place in, they have bunkers that extend, that are bigger than football fields where the training takes place.
Now, these are underground bunkers.
Right.
Go ahead.
Islamberg is only one of many Jamaat al-Fukr compounds. They're compounds in Red House, Virginia, Commerce, Georgia, York, Carolina, Dover, Tennessee, Buena Vista, Colorado, Macon, Georgia.
Hold the thought. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done. Get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
For many decades, these great United States have had security and plenty because of the thousands of small farms which supply our every nutritional need. For generations, these dedicated men and women have supplied us with fresh food at reasonable cost. There is a chance that our food supply could be cut off in the event of a national emergency. You should carefully consider planting your own home garden. A seed bank from seedcatalog.com will make it almost easy. A seed bank contains every seed you'll need to plant a basic survival garden. All heirloom and all ready for you to create that special, necessary outdoor resource. Where can you find out more? Call 888-866-9132 or go to seedcatalog.com. Call 888-866-9132 right now and order seed for this year's garden. Seedcatalog.com.
So you finally decided to start taking a vitamin supplement. Those chewables and tablets are fine if you don't mind paying for something that is only absorbed about 4 to 6%. However, a liquid supplement can have a 90% absorption rate if you choose the right one. Youngevity offers a wide variety of liquid supplements with a 90% absorption rate or more. Beyond Tangy Tangerine may be the best one ever invented. It starts as a liquid, then is freeze-dried like those instant coffees into a crystal. Then all you have to do is add a couple of scoops to water. No refrigeration, no fuss, no mess. Not only do you get a complete multiple vitamin, Beyond Tangy Tangerine also has minerals, and it tastes fantastic. You'll want to drink it all day long. So the next time you reach for a vitamin supplement, reach for Beyond Tangy Tangerine from Youngevity. For more information or to order, call 1-800-991-8730. That's 1-800-991-8730 and ask about business opportunities.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Paul is really giving all sorts of fascinating movement information going into the back of these Islamic training camps here in the United States. And Islamberg was certainly one of the major ones. And basically, this was formed many, many years ago, back in the 1980s. And it was financed by the American government to actually train these radical Islamics, many of them from prisons, to go over to Afghanistan to fight in the Afghan War, to fight the Soviets there, to join the Holy War. The United States recruited Islamists all throughout the Near East, the Middle East, and here in America to fight the Soviets. But when the war was over in 1989, when the war with the Soviets was over in 1989, instead of simply doing away with these camps, they've continued to use them to train Islamic soldiers, many who are going over to the Middle East today. And they're not fighting the Soviets. They're fighting the Americans, which doesn't make sense. But then so much of what goes on today doesn't make sense. Paul, before we go on, would you like to tell our listeners how they could get to your website and get your information and get your other books? And then, of course, when this new book is out, Crescent Moon Rising will be certain to carry that.
So Crescent Moon Rising will be, it's going to be available on the 14th, January the 14th. So it's going to be available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, just about everywhere. And if the readers are if your listeners are interested, yeah, they should pick it up because it's really kind of like a sequel to Brotherhood of Darkness. And I'll tell you why. During the I just mentioned the CIA involvement with Jelani, but during the same time, during the Afghan war, there was several of the most radical mosques in the United States. One is called the Farouk Mosque. At the Farouk Mosque, we have the blind Sheikh Rahman, who is, of course, the most one of the most notorious terrorists in the world. He's incarcerated here in the United States. He was the engineer of the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. The Farouk Mosque in Brooklyn has raised over $20 million for Osama bin Laden and for the Taliban. At the Farouk Mosque, every weekend, members of the mosque take out of the mosque fully automatic, once again, weapons, and semi-automatic weapons and shotguns and other assorted rifles. And they go to the Calverton shooting range in Long Island. And at the end of the day, they return the weapons to the Farouk Mosque in Brooklyn. This has been going on ad infinitum. So the Farouk Mosque is no different than the Red Mosque in Pakistan, since it serves as an arsenal. And many of these very radical mosques serve as arsenals. They have very sophisticated weaponry in there. They have people who are virulently anti-American. The diatribes that are espoused there on a regular basis would cause almost everybody to blanch with almost terror, because they are so violent and so radically anti-American, anti-Christian, anti-Jewish. But in any case, the Farouk Mosque, and this brings me back to Brotherhood of Darkness, throughout the 80s and throughout the 90s was receiving, and that's where the first cell of Al-Qaeda in the United States was established in 1986 by Akim, the founder of Al-Qaeda. Who had an office there at the Farouk Mosque. The Farouk Mosque, and that's just one mosque, received every year over $2 million from the CIA.
$2 million from the
CIA? Every year.
Right. Well, but basically, ladies and gentlemen, it's all about creating the best enemy money could buy. If you don't have an enemy, how are you going to rally the people behind the government? That we need the government to protect us from the enemy that we financed and created. Go right ahead.
Well, so I found out that one, that Jelani was receiving money and has, you know, openly just about affirms he's a CIA operative. You got money flowing, and anybody can verify this. The millions flowing into the most radical mosque in the United States, the Farouk Mosque, and other radical mosques, under the pretense that, they were really serving the United States during the Holy War against the Soviets. But if that's the case, then, you know, why didn't the funding stop, and why weren't these places shut down and investigated? Why is that? Why do they still serve as arsenals to this day? None of it makes sense. But that leads me to another manifestation of Islam in the United States, and another tie to Brotherhood of Darkness, which I must establish to prove that this is a sequel to Brotherhood of Darkness. You got, not far from where I live, a guy by the name of Gulen. And he, as Dr. Stan said before, is a Turk. He was thrown out of Turkey in 1998 for trying to overthrow the Turkish government and trying to form a party to do away with the secular government that was there. He has settled in Pennsylvania, and he's lived in Pennsylvania ever since. If you go to where Gulen lives now, he's in the Pocono Mountains, once again, not far from where I am right now and where my home is. He has a mountain fortress up there. And in the fortress, it's, I'd say maybe about 75 acres. It's walled. There's sentry post, armed guards, Turks. Nobody speaks English. Helicopters flying around you. The neighbors complaining about gunfire taking place there all the time. Gulen, once again, was left Turkey because he was accused of trying to overthrow the secular government. Well, from here, from Pennsylvania, he helped form the Justice and Development Party in Turkey, which has succeeded in gaining control of the government and transforming Turkey from a secular state into an Islamic republic.
I think the people have to understand that the CIA was deeply involved in actually replacing the existing Turkish government with this new Turkish government, which is really tied into the radical Islamic movement. And it doesn't make any sense that we, the CIA, would be fostering this radical form of Islam. Unless, of course, there is another agenda behind what's going on, which I believe there is, and I thought you do as well. But please go right ahead. I think it's so important for our listeners to understand that what you're in essence saying is that the CIA working through Gulen has actually toppled the Turkish government, the secular government, the military government, and now we have the radical Islamists controlling Turkey. And, of course, now, of course, there's an increasing Turkish influence. Once again, it's almost as if we are reconstituting the Ottoman Empire that was destroyed after the First World War. Go right ahead.
Dr. Stan, as you know, Turkey, just going back to in the 1990s, was, I mean, there was a law that forbade women from appearing in public with facial coverings, with hijabs. Now all the Turkish women are on burqas. Turkey right now has the highest number of mosques per capita than any place in the world. Now, this was a secular place. This was a secular state. There are right now 90,000 imams in Turkey, more imams than teachers and physicians combined. And Gulen controls the government. Erdogan, the prime minister, is a Gulenite, and he says so. Abdul Gul, the president of Turkey, is a Gulen disciple. He says so. So they're controlled. Gulen controls all the newspapers over there. He owns the TV station. Nothing appears in print without his permission, and all this is puppeteering everything from Pennsylvania. He has established throughout Turkey and throughout Central Asia thousands of schools in order to indoctrinate students into militant Islam so they can take a part in the reconstruction of the Ottoman Empire. These schools are so radical that they have been outlawed by the Russians and outlawed in Uzbekistan. And they have been outlawed in the Netherlands. And the Netherlands is the most liberal and tolerant country in the world. But these schools have a very, very definite agenda. Behram Bakri, who's Gulen's second in command, said the purpose of the schools is to expand the Islamization of Turkish nationality and the Turkification of Islam, to create a universal caliphate. I'm quoting from him. So the schools serve that purpose. Now, what's interesting to you, and this is something else I just found out. This is why I'm bringing in Brotherhood of Darkness. There are thousands of schools throughout Central Asia, all these new Stan, not Dr. Stan, but Turkish Stan, Turkmenistan, these Stan republics throughout that were formerly part of the Soviet Union that haven't established since 1993. All of these republics are Turkish, and Gulen has established schools in them so they would all be united. united with Turkey in the creation of this new world order, this new Islamic world order. Well, what came out when Gulen applied for his permanent residency, it came out that the CIA, Graham Fuller and company, had planted in all these schools throughout Central Asia CIA operatives they were housing CIA operatives and acting as a shelter for CIA activities. That's a fact. And another thing that came out about Gulen, he's establishing this. By the way, Gulen right now has over 150 schools in the United States. They're serving the same purpose. They're all funded by taxpayers. Like in Arizona, they're called the Sonoran Academies. In Arkansas, they're called the Lisa Academies. In California, they're called the Magnolia Science Academies. In Florida, they're called the Fulton Sunshine Schools. In Missouri, they're called the Frontier Schools of Excellence. In Ohio, they're called the Horizon Science Academies. In Oklahoma, they're called the Dove Science Academies. In Texas, they're called the Harmony Schools. So you never think they're Islamic schools, but they're all the administrators are Turks, radical Turks for the most part. No, totally. And the teachers are all, by and large, at least 70% of them, are Turks who are here with H-1 visas, despite the fact that we have a glut of teachers to teach at these academies. And once again, there are over 150 throughout the United States. They're charter schools. They're fully supported and paid for by U.S. taxpayers. Now, what the Gulen people say is, oh, no, we really don't teach religion at the schools. We don't really indoctrinate them in Islam, in militant Islam. But what they do admit is that they do manage to persuade people to become militant Islamist by timsel, which they mean by role model, so that the teachers will bond so closely with the students, and they'll take the students on trips to Turkey, which they do, to the Turkish Olympias, which these Gulen schools support, and indoctrinate them in Turkish dance and dress and folklore. And Turkish language. Turkish language is taught in all of these schools. I mean, nothing like French or German or Latin, for heaven's sake. But Turkish is. They're all indoctrinated in that. But they're indoctrinated by that procedure called TEMSL, by role model. The teachers take them so closely under their wings that the students try to emulate them. And by emulating them, they also become more Islamic. But it's this is what's interesting about the about Gulen in regards to Brotherhood of Darkness. When I was looking at his records, when he applied for permanent residency, people from Homeland Security said, this guy is dangerous. This guy is called the most dangerous Muslim in the world. This guy has established radical Islams radical madrasas throughout the world. This guy has brought about the transformation of an entire government, of an entire culture. This guy has an agenda, and this guy should not be permitted to live here. Well, at his trial for permanent residency, at least 20 government officials, CIA officials, spoke of Gulen, on behalf of Gulen, saying this guy is such a wonderful educator. This guy is an intellectual par none. This guy, this guy has met with the Pope and the Patriarch of Russian Orthodoxy. This guy is a very close friend of the Clintons and the Bushes. This guy must be part of our. We must embrace him because he can contribute so much to the life of the United States. Well, the truth of the matter is that Gulen can't speak a word of English. And Gulen doesn't even have a third grade education. But this wonderful educator has set up schools throughout the country and throughout the world to bring about this new Islamic world order, and we're sponsoring it. And the real kicker is this, that Gulen has over $30 billion in assets, according to court records, in Philadelphia when he was applying for citizenship. Over $30 billion. That puts him in the same category as Gates and Warren Buffett. He is one of the richest men in the world. And that money, guess where it came from?
I bet it came from the CIA and drug money, of course.
There you go.
And I think that the whole story is so incredible. The average American would say, this can't be true. What if it says most people don't understand what's happened to Turkey? Most people don't understand what's going on in the Near East and the Middle East. Basically, these countries move from at least relative to some degree of freedom into a totalitarian state under Sharia law, being sponsored by our own Central Intelligence Agency, and the average American has no idea.
Absolutely. And it's not only taking place over there, but this country is being transformed so rapidly that most people who are, you know, just casual readers or casual glancers at Fox News have really no idea what's taking place.
And the Muslim faith is the most rapid growing faith in the United States today.
Far and away.
I wonder why they'd ever tell us that. Go right ahead.
Now, far and away, that's for a variety of reasons, Dr. Stan, but you got to realize that out of the 330,000 houses of worship in the United States right now, almost 9% are Muslim.
And the fact that nobody's talking about this, ladies and gentlemen, this movement is spreading and spreading rapidly across America, recruiting certainly the black population, but even some of our disillusioned youth are falling prey to this lie.
You already know that calcium is important, but did you know that calcium cannot be absorbed without magnesium? That's a fact. And the calcium that isn't absorbed calcifies your soft muscle tissues. Haven't you ever wondered what's really causing all your muscle aches? I'm Pat Sullivan, the founder of Jigsaw Health. I created Jigsaw Magnesium with SRT to solve my own magnesium deficiency problems. You see, magnesium helps people feel younger because magnesium keeps the soft tissues from calcifying. This helps you sleep better at night and feel more energized during the day. Call 888-352-5050 and we'll explain why Jigsaw Magnesium with sustained release technology is so much better than any drugstore magnesium supplement. Mention this radio ad and receive $5 off your order. 888-352-5050, jigsawmagnesium.com.
What has happened to the judicial system in these United States? From the Supreme Court to the smallest county seat, we've seen the judiciary make decisions which are more legislative than interpreting. The judicial system was designed to ensure that the laws of the land were just and constrained by our Constitution. Now judges have immunity and cannot be prosecuted when they act outside the law. This must stop. The judicial branch needs reform. We must pass laws which bring a renewed sense of justice to our nation's court system. I urge you to go to judicialreformnow.com. That's judicialreformnow.com. At that website, you can find out what's really going on in this area of lawlessness, and more importantly, you can find out what you can do to stem the tide of judicial malpractice. JudicialReformNow.com. JudicialReformNow.com.
Most men, when they reach 60 years of age, have urinary tract problems. They have to urinate frequently during the day, and they have to get up several times every night. What's the solution? Many men use a herbal product called Prostate Support. It contains saw palmetto and stinging thistle. It's available from Radio Liberty. Dr. Stan takes Prostate Support and recommends it. And thousands of men take Prostate Support every day because it relieves their urinary tract symptoms. If you would like to try Prostate Support, call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Once again, the telephone number for Prostate Support is 800-544-8927. And I suggest you call today.
God bless you too.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Paul doesn't have a website, but he does have a number of books. Some of them we already carry, and if you can go to our website and look them up. But we're going to be carrying The Crescent Moon Rising. You're vitally important that you understand what's really going on today. And, of course, you can only understand this if you understand we create enemies, and this is all contrived. The CIA is certainly funding this whole radical Islamic movement. Why would they do that? Why? Very simply, because we're going to have a war with the Muslim world. How do we know that? Well, first of all, because we know that they're uniting these countries under the control of the Muslim Brotherhood, and secondly, because we've read the scriptures. You read Ezekiel 38 and 39, and look at the nations which are going to be coming against Israel in the latter days. Look at them and then see what's going on today. And what you really see when you understand what's happening geopolitically is a fulfillment of biblical prophecy. And at that point, it all begins to come together. Now, first of all, we will carry the book entitled The Rising Crescent Moon. We don't know what it'll cost, but you can call our 800 number after the first of the week, and we'll have the information for you. And then, of course, you really need to get some of our material. You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. That's Brotherhood of Darkness. And we hope many of you out there would want to get a case of them. You can get them very economically, less than $2.40 a book. You can give them away. Of course, you can sell them. You do whatever you want to. But you can change people's lives if they really understand the spiritual nature of what's going on. And the secret societies, yes, ladies and gentlemen, there really are secret and covert societies out there. If you don't need it, if you don't believe their secret cabal, read David Rockefeller's memoirs. We carry the book, page 405, where he talks about how these radicalists believe we are part of some sort of a secret cabal working against the best interests of the United States, and accuse my family and me of working certainly with others around the world to bring about our global and economic structure, one world, if you will. And if that's the charge, I'm guilty, and I'm proud of it. That's David Rockefeller admitting they're part of a secret cabal. If we carry Barry Goldwater's book, With No Apologies, written in 1979, page 280, where Barry Goldwater talks about David Rockefeller's Trilateral Commission, which is the secret cabal. And, of course, incidentally, John Kerry came from there. Susan Rice came from there. Most of Obama's key people all came from the Trilateral Commission. There's only 87 of them. And the whole North American chapter, and that also contains Canadians and Mexicans, make up part of the 86 people. And yet, 11 of those to 12 were in the original Obama cabinet. Obama is simply their front man. Understand nothing as it appears to be. Between 1977 and the year 2008, every president of the United States and or vice president, not both necessarily, but and or vice president came from the membership roles of the Trilateral Commission. That was simply Jimmy Carter and his vice president, then the Reagan administration, it was George Herbert Walker Bush, vice president and then president, and then, of course, followed by Bill Clinton and certainly his vice president, Al Gore. They were both members of the Trilateral Commission. And then, of course, George W. Bush was not a member. His dad was. His dad was a member of the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderbergers, the Skull and Bones, the Bohemian Grove, the Council on Foreign Relations. He was director of the CIA. That was George Herbert Walker Bush. And they wanted his little boy, George W., to become the president. And so Al Gore won the election in 2000. But, of course, they got the Supreme Court to give the election to Georgie. And then in 2004, John Kerry won the election, but they gave it to George W. Bush. And Kerry was told, just stand aside, he's a member of the Trilateral Commission. He's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. They promised he'd get some important position. And now, of course, Senator Kerry is going to become the Secretary of Defense. He'll be rewarded for not challenging the 2000 election, which was stolen. This is the way the system works, ladies and gentlemen. Our number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com. We hope you want to get a case of Radio Liberty, of my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness. And then we ask you to pray for America, but please pray for Radio Liberty. Across the sea, let us swear allegiance. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But as the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you, the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and well, for the next hour, hopefully, they're going to be the views of William Grigg, who certainly is one of my favorite guests. Well, just all of our guests are favorites, but Paul Williams, we had the last hour, certainly has a great grasp of what's going on, and William has a great grasp, really, of how this applies to what's going on today. William formerly was the senior editor of the New American Magazine, and then, of course, he went off on his own. He, for a time, was with the Republic Magazine, and now, of course, he writes, certainly, a blog on a regular basis. You'll find his blogs up on Lou Rockwell, and he does a great job writing there at Lou Rockwell. He's written a number of books. Unfortunately, they're out of print. If we had the funds, why would you put them back into print, because they're all well worthwhile. But right now, of course, William does write our newsletter for us. I don't have time to write the newsletter every month. I did it for about 15 years. And you can read all of our newsletters up at radioliberty.com. Just go to the section on letters. They're there. But William writes our newsletter, and of course he helps us with some of the programs, and he actually does some fascinating programs during the week. We're covering the court system and how corrupt our judiciary system has become. Because, of course, when a nation turns against God, when a nation takes God and prayer and the Ten Commandments out of our schools, so that our young people will not have any idea and any moral foundation, when half of the Christian marriages in America end in divorce, where they've changed the music of of the churches, they've changed the message of the church. They ever talk about how God brings vengeance upon nations that turn against him? They never talk about how God sort of judges nations that turn against him, and that we should fear God? No, God is simply love. He'd never do anything bad to anybody at all. And I think there are an awful lot of Christians in America are going to be very surprised at the things that are going to be unfolding very, very soon. And our hope and prayer is we can have a great revival in America and return to worship of the God of the Bible and not the new God that has been imposed upon us. Well, with that as the background, William Grigg, thank you very much for being with us.
Dr. Stan, it's always a blessing to be with you. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Well, you go ahead and pick up the story here. What are we going to talk about tonight? Because there's so many things going on. What did you choose to talk on?
Well, the story that we need to discuss is the one you're telling, and that is the systemic rejection on the part of a uniquely blessed people of the blessing of being ruled by law rather than ruled by men. Laws that are rooted, of course, in an appreciation of nature, as Blackstone put it a couple of centuries ago, the natural law is something we learn through reason. It's intuited through right reason, but it's also, of course, understood through revelation, and it ultimately is rooted in an understanding of God's law, the law of the Creator, the fact that our rights originate with him, and the responsibilities we have to him and to each other are part of that law as well. And one of the things that we're seeing today, as we have for the last couple of weeks, is a really potent resurgence of the demand on the part of those who presume to rule us in defiance of law, that we be left disarmed and helpless so that we will submit to their ministrations without cavil or without reservation. And that, of course, is something that has been historically a precursor toward horrible things, including mass bloodshed committed by government. And we're really at a threshold point, a potential inflection point in our history that is fraught with all kinds of peril and all kinds of ominous potential.
I certainly agree with you, and I think people really have to understand that it was Thomas Jefferson who said so well, God who gave us life, gave us liberty, can the liberty of a nation be secure when the conviction has been forgotten that liberty is the gift of God? I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, and his justice will not sleep forever. Go right ahead, William.
One of the things I wanted to share with you and with the listening audience this evening is an experience that I consider to be a necessary counterpoint to a theme that I write about and discuss a great deal, and that, of course, is the corruption of law enforcement and the fact that law enforcement today is not so much a matter of trying to protect the law-abiding public, but rather to enforce the will of the ruling elite at the expense of the law-abiding public. We don't have peace officers for the most part anymore. We have law enforcers, and the laws they're enforcing don't meet Blackstone's definition of what a law is. We're talking about a doctrine that's referred to as positivism, which is the old idea that you can read about, for heaven's sake, in Plato's Republics, where a sophist by the name of Thrasymachus said that all justice really is a rationale for the imposition of the will of the stronger. And that, unfortunately, is the default definition of law in most polities, our own included. Well, a couple of days ago, I had an opportunity in the company of a friend of mine by the name of Adam Birch, who actually arranged this meeting, to meet with the sheriff of Payette County. His name is Chad Huff. And he's a man who attended one of the meetings held by Sheriff Richard Mack of the Constitutional Peace Officers and Sheriff's Association. And Mr. Huff has a background as a state trooper. As a matter of fact, his first wife was also a state trooper. She was killed in the line of duty. They were the first husband and wife team of state troopers in the history of the Idaho Highway Patrol. Some people might think that it's perhaps unwise to be a husband and a wife pair of state troopers. Perhaps it's not a particularly wise thing to have female state troopers, and certainly there'd be complications if both spouses are in the law enforcement capacity, but they were both conscientious people. And what happened is that Adam Birch had heard Sheriff Huff at a local meeting here in Payette County and had been impressed with the fact that he had been quite voluble in condemning the Patriot Act and the NDAA, the 2012 version of the National Defense Authorization Act, which contained those provisions that would permit U.S. citizens to be detained in military custody indefinitely. And what he said at that meeting, as my friend Adam explained to me, was that this would not happen in Payette County on his watch. He is similarly passionate in describing his commitment to protecting the right to armed self-defense. And so, in light of what's going on right now with the engineered panic over civilian firearms ownership. I don't need, like to use the term civilian in this context. I should call armed citizens, the idea of citizen firearms ownership, and the obvious intent on the part of those who presume to rule us to disarm the public so as to make us more or less susceptible to anything they see fit to inflict on us. Adam wanted to talk with Sheriff Huff and sound him out as to what might be done.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William is telling us the story of what happened. They went to see the sheriff there in Hobbs in Payette County, where William lives, and apparently the sheriff there had certainly expressed in the past his concern about the usurpation of law. He was very concerned about the Patriot Act. He was concerned about the very definite effort on the part of the administration to disarm the people, and he had let it be known that he didn't agree with these things. He had actually attended a meeting put on by Sheriff Mack, and one of the sheriffs that had spoken out. And ladies and gentlemen, we need sheriffs who believe in the Constitution, who will not simply kowtow to the federal government, which wants a dictatorship here, because not the federal government, it's what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness, that controls the federal government, that makes mockery of our electoral process, and certainly is intent upon, at the present time, using the tragedy that took place at the Sandy Hook School in Newtown, Connecticut, using that, and of course, to disarm the American people, to register, to confiscate the guns. And believe me, they're not just interested in military weapons. They want every weapon because they want a totally subservient people. They know exactly what they're doing. And I have never seen, I cannot think of, any propaganda program as effective and certainly as all-encompassing as the current program to emphasize the tragedy of what happened to those 20 little children there, certainly at the Sandy Hook School. Now, nobody ever points out who was responsible for this, and the people who were responsible are those who made it certain that there'd be nobody in that school with a gun to protect the children. Basically, of course, if you want to protect the children so there won't be another episode like that, you want to allow teachers and administrators to carry a gun. Had there been a gun there, why, of course, they might have been one or two children lost. but there wouldn't have been 20. And it is the people like Piers Morgan, the people like certainly Joe Biden and Obama, who actually want to disarm the people who are responsible for the death. More guns, less crime. Less guns, more crime. No guns, then you got a slaughter like you got there at the Sandy Hook Elementary School. With that as the background, certainly William is telling us about what happened when he was going to go to talk to the sheriff there in Payette County to find out how he feels about what's going on. William, pick up the story.
Yes, this is, as I said, actually something that my friend Adam Burchett arranged. He took the initiative, and I just tagged along. And we spoke with him for, I think, a little more than an hour, and I was really impressed that he would carve out that much time from a very busy schedule to talk to us. I was really impressed with his demeanor. I was particularly taken with the fact that he is an exceptionally good listener. Conversation, of course, is a two-way process. He listens very carefully, and he expresses himself very cogently. And that impressed me because that's not always the case when you're talking with public officials of any variety, particularly in law enforcement. He expressed, of his own volition, concerns about a number of issues that I have brought up that I've written about in your newsletter, and I've written about at some depth and at some length in my blog.
Incidentally, that last newsletter of yours was superb, and we'll be going out here. It's a December newsletter, but thank you so much. I think you said it so beautifully in that newsletter, and I'm sure that all of our listeners out there will look forward to getting it. Go right ahead.
I do appreciate that, Dr. Stan. One of the things that he brought up of his own volition was his concern about the extent to which the federal government has satellitized sheriff's offices in particular. One of the questions I asked him in the beginning of our conversation is if he considered himself a constitutionalist. He pointed out that there has been a really effective campaign to inflict upon that term a very negative connotation in the minds of people who are acquainted with it. He didn't bring up the so-called Southern Poverty Law Center and Morris D's and people of that ilk, but he obviously was thinking about the efforts being made by these hard-left propaganda outfits to indoctrinate law enforcement and to impose upon the public mind the idea that people who talk about the Constitution are to be looked upon as domestic enemies, perhaps terrorists, domestic terrorists of the Timothy McVeigh variety and so forth. And, of course, the Department of Homeland Security put out that notorious report several years ago, making it look as if anybody who is steeped in the literature of our founding and has a reverence for the documents that were used as a charter for the Republic, anybody who meets that description should be looked upon as an insurrectionist, probably somebody who's plotting to kill police officers and commit other acts of public mayhem. And, of course, Sheriff Huff said that he considers himself a constitutionalist, first of all, because that's a requirement in the state constitution of Idaho that every sheriff's office, every sheriff, describe himself, define himself as a constitutionalist in his outlook that he has loyalty to and an understanding of the Constitution of the state of the United States. But he said that in terms of how he looks upon the document, he subscribes to the view that his duties are dictated by that document, by the analog here at the state level in Idaho. And that notwithstanding the fact that there's this effort to demonize and vilify constitutionalists, he considers himself to be one. And then that specific issue, he said that it was disturbing to him to see how most of the people who are graduating from the Peace Officer Standards and Training Academy, the Post Academy here in Idaho, like it is the case in most parts of the country, most recent graduates embrace the idea that the Constitution is an evolving document, that it has no set and defined meaning, that it has to be modified or updated in order to accommodate modern prejudices, and that it does not impose limitations on government power, but rather it's an enabling document intended to provide a rationale and a license for government power, that those things that the government is not specifically forbidden to do, the government can do, and that those things it's specifically forbidden to do are optional. You know, these are things that he brought up, and so he does a great deal of, for lack of a better way of describing it, deprogramming the people he hires as deputies. And he was really quite frustrated over the fact that this is a very extensive problem. The other problem he brought up with respect to the personnel that he hires is the fact that at the post academies, they're trained to look with suspicion and a certain degree of hostility on the public at large. They're trained to look upon the public as threats to officer safety rather than people whom they're supposed to serve and where necessary to run risks in order to protect. And he's very much the old school, and by old school I mean pre-1993, 1994. We've talked about this, Dr. Stan, and I brought it up in our discussions with Sheriff Huff, that there has been a definable change in the institutional culture of law enforcement away from the ideal of being peace officers and more toward being law enforcers, first of all, but secondly, to where the most important consideration is officer safety rather than the defense of the persons and property of the public, which is what a peace officer is supposed to do. And Sheriff Huff explained to me that when he was a state trooper, he never once used his gun, never once pulled his gun out of his holster, that he had an impact weapon, which is a small wand or a baton type of an implement called an asp, and he had pepper spray. He never used either of those either in the course of about 20 years as a state trooper. It just wasn't necessary. He discussed a fairly recent incident in which there was a domestic violence call across the river in Ontario, if I remember the anecdote correctly, and law enforcement agencies from the Treasure Valley were called in, and the SWAT team assembled. The SWAT team actually includes people who live on both sides of the Idaho-Oregon border, and they ring the house, and Sheriff Huff drove up, and he didn't wait for instructions, didn't wait for a briefing. He walked up and knocked on the door and talked to the barricaded suspect. He said, "This is Chad Huff. I know you. Let me come in and talk to you. I'm not going to pull my gun, and I'm not going to throw you to the ground. I just want to talk to you about the situation." He was able to take him into custody using soft hand techniques. And he said that he had gotten a little bit of pushback on this because it violated about 12 of the existing policies regarding officer safety. And his response was, "Look, if you're doing this for a living, you have to be willing to run a certain number of risks. That's part of the job. If you don't find yourself comfortable with that assignment, then find some other occupation." And that's what he's trying to teach the deputies that he hires. But unfortunately, he said, because of their background, what they're trained and the indoctrination they receive at the Post Academy, and also a lot of them come out of the military where they have a very different mindset based on clearing and holding and establishing dominance, he has to do something that he referred to as de-thugging the deputies that he hires. He actually used the expression, "I have to de-thug these deputies," in order to make them suitable for service here in the Payette County Sheriff's Office. So
it sounds to me like you are very lucky to have somebody like that as your sheriff. I would hope that our sheriff, I would talk to him, but I mean, I don't think that many people really have this attitude today.
He's exceptional precisely because of the things that he said and the way that he is pursuing the office that he's been elected to. And that's another subject that came up. He understands the distinction between the elected sheriffs and the constitutional role that they play and municipal police departments and police chiefs who preside over them. As it happens, his brother is the police chief in Fruitland, which is a city about 4 miles, about 4 miles to the east of Payette. And he pointed out that it's a vastly different role and that, as he put it, people are much more comfortable when they're around people in brown, meaning, of course, the color of the uniforms of the sheriff's office here. They feel a lot more comfortable around people who are wearing brown than they are around people who are wearing blue. And that's because, for the most part, municipal police departments, this is a subject we've discussed on this program, I believe, police departments are not accountable to the public. They're accountable only to the municipal governments that hire them. And then the accountability is really quite attenuated. They're not elected. They're not people who can be removed through popular political action. For the most part, they enjoy qualified immunity, which means that if you take them to court because of an abuse or because of corruption, unless you're a member of the municipal government, you're not likely to be granted standing. And for the most part, once again, their role is that of extracting revenue and regimenting the lives of people rather than protecting their persons and property the way that sheriff's offices are supposed to.
Well, I really think that the time that all of us begin thinking about our local sheriff and talk to him if you have an opportunity, understand really, of course, that you may very well, should the system of law and order as we know it break down in America, and if you haven't heard our talks on EMP or Ambassador Cooper's talk on EMP, you'll realize, of course, that there's a very real possibility that we certainly are going to have a breakdown in the structure of our society. If you haven't heard Ambassador Cooper's talk, it's available from Radio Liberty and our new book, A Nation Forsaken, by a senior government official. Fascinating information on the very real dangers that faces it today. You go right ahead, William, because I think it's so vitally important. I think you are very fortunate to have a sheriff up there.
Oh, yes.
Basically, of course, what we may see is ultimately having to really go back to the local community to control this. It's a fascinating book. I don't know if you're acquainted with it. Nation Forsaken by Michael Maloff, a senior policy advisor to the Assistant Secretary of Defense, and a man certainly with a vast background of defense and knowing the real danger of an EMP attack. He now is, incidentally, a full-time writer for our good friend Joseph Farah at WorldNet Daily. But, of course, his latest book, A Nation Forsaken, fascinating. We're going to be carrying it. And if you're interested, I'll get you a copy.
I really
believe that this is a subject we need to understand. And basically, pivotal is going to be our local sheriff's department, our local police, our local government. We may have to rely more upon them, but we want to have good people in positions of authority. Pick up the story, William.
I agree with that analysis in terms of what's likely to happen regarding the centrifugal forces at work here economically, culturally, and politically, and we have to be more focused on what's happening in our counties and in our cities and less obsessed about, if you will, sort of the global or even national perspective on what's going on. We can't be indifferent to what's happening globally and nationally. Those developments have ramifications for what happens in our neighborhoods. But our neighborhoods are often neglected and our county governments are often left unaccountable. And at the county, of course, you have the sheriff is really the most important elected official in terms of both accountability to those who elected him and the responsibilities he interposed were necessary against all lawlessness, whether it's something that emerges from within the county or something that is exogenous to the community. You're talking about a threat that comes from outside, usually in the form of intervention by state or federal officials. And that's another point of conversation we had with Sheriff Huff. And I agree with you, Dr. Stan. We are blessed to have Sheriff Huff as the county sheriff here in Payette, if only because he's willing to listen. And I grant, as with all people who are in the political class, there's a possibility that Sheriff Huff is a very cunningly disguised wolf. But at least he's willing to put himself on record and to speak candidly about these issues. And most of what he says, not everything, but most of what he says, struck me as very sensible and commendable. We did have a disagreement about the merits of the so-called war on drugs. He's somebody who believes that there should be a government role in regulating what people choose to consume. And I agree with him that these are terribly unwise things to do if you're consuming methamphetamine, for instance, which is a very commonplace, very widespread drug. It does impair your rational faculties, and it does create a situation where that impairment may be a risk to others. What I pointed out to him is that I have within my circle of acquaintances and some of my relatives, for that matter, people who have served time in prison, and while in prison, they were first exposed to methamphetamine. So you could literally create a prison society, and you can't prevent people from getting these drugs and using them to harm themselves if they're determined to do so. And so we did have a disagreement on that point. We had a disagreement over an issue that I thought was really important and I think is growing more important all the time. That is the Fourth Amendment, and specifically whether there is a Fourth Amendment violation when you're using helicopters to overfly private property in search of marijuana growth. That's a federally funded initiative that is not something the Payette County Sheriff's Office is involved in, but the Sheriff's Office across the Snake River in Malheur County, which is headed by...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. William is just saying that how pleased he was after talking to his local sheriff, but they did have a couple of points of disagreement, and basically, of course, it had to do with the war on drugs, and certainly, should the local officials, should the federal government be restricting what people want to do? That is stupid. If somebody's under the influence of drugs, and they're driving a car, and there's an accident, they should go to prison with terrible consequences for that, but of course, certainly, if somebody wants to do something that is harmful to themselves, and they want to be stupid, why, of course, can we really pass laws to keep people from doing stupid things that we did? Why we should outlaw tobacco immediately, because it's one of the greatest killers in America today. But, of course, the other thing, of course, William was talking about the Fourth Amendment and this idea that now it's perfectly all right to have a helicopter flying over your property looking for a marijuana grove. Now, I believe if the local community wants to outlaw drugs, mm-hmm. they have a right to do it. If the local community wants to legalize drugs, they have a right to do it. And, of course, if you were asked what I would believe locally, I would vote against it. But I do not want the federal government interfering in this, and I certainly don't want the federal government officials, I mean, flying over my property looking for drugs. It's not in their prerogative. Basically, the federal government is very limited in what it can do. If you read the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8. Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution says these things the federal government can do, and anything else, the 9th and 10th Amendment says anything else that is not specifically laid out, the rights given to Congress and the United States, then these functions are to be reserved to the states and to the people. And basically, of course, I'm sure you were against it with the federal government coming into our communities of trying to, of course, restrict rights to drugs. Now, the big thing nobody wants to talk about is the greatest purveyor of drugs and illegal drugs in the world is the American CIA. Mm-hmm. Yep. One reason they want them illegal is because they make a lot of money, and that's how they fund people like Gulen and others, and they finance their whole world revolutionary movement. And the federal government, on one hand, is certainly purveying drugs. On the other hand, is making them illegal to drive up the price. Then, of course, there's something wrong with the picture. The average person doesn't understand that. William, you pick up the story.
That's exactly right. It's a price support program for the criminal underclass that's allied to the CIA. That's one of the reasons why every time you create a prohibition, you end up with a situation where the government, rather than abolishing a vice, is syndicating it and making it profitable for people who are connected to the senior underside of what goes on politically. And that's one area discussion that we had with the sheriff's office, one area of disagreement with respect to the Fourth Amendment and overflights by National Guard helicopters. He told me something I hadn't known, which is that we have that happening here in Payette County, but this is not something that his office is involved in. This is a state initiative where the National Guard itself is collecting evidence using these overflights and infrared imaging and other sophisticated technology to locate marijuana grows. And I said, well, wait a second. First of all, that's a Fourth Amendment violation. You're talking about private property. If you're talking about lands that are held publicly, which, by the way, I don't believe should exist, but if they're lands that are held publicly along a riverbank or some of these other unallocated areas here in Payette County, that's a different question. But if you're overflying somebody's home and looking down upon his property without warrant or probable cause, that's a pretty clear Fourth Amendment violation. And Sheriff Huff said, well, that's something would fall within the plain view doctrine. I said, no, not if you're in a mechanical conveyance over the guy's land.
I think that, you know. It's, William, I understand how he feels because it took me a long time to change my positions. I'll never forget when Ron Paul was always talking against government regulation of drugs. And I can believe in everything that Ron Paul said, except that one thing. And by gosh, we had to limit the use of drugs. It took me a long time to be able to realize, of course, that yes, we should limit drugs, but we can't do it by legislation. We have to change people's perspective. And a government that can legal certainly can come after our drugs, can come after anything else at all. And Ron Paul was absolutely right. I was absolutely wrong. But because I'm against drugs and the misuse of drugs and the destruction of people's lives, I certainly should never give the federal government the ability to go after those drugs because, as you just said, the largest purveyor of drugs in the world today is the CIA. Now, if you're out there in the listening audience, you're hearing that, and you say, that couldn't be true. I mean, the ravings of a madman. Go up on the internet and just type into your search engine, CIA finances drugs, CIA works with mafia. I mean, basically, the CIA works with the mafia. In fact, certainly the time after, and so does the FBI for that matter, they could not have existed for all those years without the full help and support of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. In fact, the FBI steadfastly refused to investigate the mafia until the time of the Kennedy administration when Bobby Kennedy demanded that the FBI go after them. Up to that point, J. Edgar Hoover protected the mafia. But the average individual doesn't understand how these things work, how it fits together. But the CIA is the largest purveyor of drugs in the world today. Go up to the internet, find out if I've really lost it, or could this nightmare really be true? Well, William, you go right ahead.
Dr. Stan, to your recommendation regarding people's research efforts into the issue of CIA involvement in narcotics trafficking, I'd recommend three other sources, the first of which is the late Gary Webb. The last name is spelled W-E-B-B. He was a writer for the San Jose Mercury News, who in 1997, if memory serves, started a series discussing how the CIA was directly implicated in the crack epidemic as a way of raising money to fund covert operations in Latin America. Many people who were attached to the Nicaraguan resistance, or the Contras as they're more commonly called, were involved in peddling narcotics as a way of raising off the books funding for their operations during the period of the Boland Amendment. That was in the early 1980s, and within a couple of years, you had Freeway Rick, a major drug peddler in California, Los Angeles, actually the Bay Area to begin with, who was acting as the regional wholesale distributor for crack cocaine, which was being used to raise money for the Contras. Michael Levine, L-E-V-I-N-E, is a highly decorated former DEA undercover operative, the most highly decorated undercover operative in the DEA's history. He's written a number of books, including The Big White Lie and Triangle of Death, that discuss the role of the CIA in promoting the importation of narcotics and also in bringing to power people overseas in Latin America particularly, but also in some regions of the Near East who are involved in cultivating and distributing heroin and cocaine. Michael Levine is a wonderful man. He's somebody I consider a friend, and he's somebody who is another convert, if you will, to the proposition that drug prohibition is simple madness. John Sparky McLaughlin, the last name is spelled M-C-L-A-U-G-H-L-I-N. John Sparky McLaughlin is a former highly decorated Pennsylvania State Bureau of Narcotics investigation operative who had exposed a CIA-backed drug smuggling ring on the East Coast and ended up losing his job as a result. He's written a memoir that I've reviewed in my blog and on the LouRockwell.com site entitled Damned from Memory. And the phrase damned from memory is one that you read about in the Soviet Union. When somebody became an unperson in the Soviet Union, he was said to be damned from memory, he was banished from memory. And his memoir is a fascinating look at how, down to the level of local police departments, the CIA has its tendrils of influence in order to suppress the efforts of people to expose their involvement in what's going on with narcotics. Now, of course, this is something that is well known to people who are willing to find the information.
Hold that thought, hold the thought, and we'll be back here in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William is simply talking about, certainly, how can you verify the fact that the CIA is involved in drugs? He mentioned, of course, getting the articles and the essays written by a man named Gary Webb, W-E-B-B-B. Actually, we interviewed Barry a number of times before he committed suicide by shooting himself in the head twice because he wanted to be sure he was dead. We actually did interview Gary, and that's actually, it exposes CIA influence in drugs, and you're not supposed to do that. If you do, it could be a lethal experience, as he found out when he shot himself in the head twice, because he wanted to make sure he was dead. Go right ahead.
Yeah, he's a charter member, if I'm not mistaken, of that most exclusive all clubs, which is those who managed to commit suicide by shooting themselves in the head twice. It really is an unusual thing, but Gary Webb was ruined professionally and personally as a result of his conscientious efforts, which have been perfectly validated by, among other things, Senate investigating committees. His efforts to expose the CIA's involvement in cultivating and propagating the problem of drug addiction and the narcotics markets in the United States. And he was somebody who was contacted by John McLaughlin. His friends call him Sparky. After John McLaughlin discovered that the CIA was working with a group of Dominican drug smugglers to raise money to fund a political campaign back in the Dominican Republic for a presidential candidate, a very hard left presidential candidate who was the favored choice of the Clinton administration back in the 1990s. And that candidate never won, and he managed to do a lot of damage, notwithstanding the fact that he didn't win the office. But the point was that Sparky McLaughlin came across this perfectly by accident. He's investigating heroin smuggling and cocaine smuggling by members of Dominican crime syndicates. He kept pulling on threads, and he found out that that these people were politically connected to the Clinton administration. And suddenly, when he's investigating this Dominican drug cartel, he finds himself talking to a field operative for the CIA who's demanding that he turn over all the information on his confidential informant. He refuses to cooperate. Within a week, suddenly he's no longer a narcotics investigator, and within a month, it's pretty clear they're trying to get rid of him. They eventually managed to drive him out of law enforcement, but they were trying to send him and three other BNI investigators to prison on perfectly spurious civil rights charges. And that element of the story reminds me a lot of another person whose name should be a search term for those who are looking to do further research, and that's Joe Occipinti, O-C-C-H-I-P-I-N-T-I, Joe Occipinti. That's a rather complicated name. The most convenient way to find this information is to go to lewrockwell.com and look for in the archives of lewrockwell.com an article that I published a few months ago talking about the drug war and about John McLaughlin. And the name of the article, the name of the book is Damned from Memory. And the article I wrote is called Damned from Memory: When the Drug War Turns on Its Own. It talks about Sparky McLaughlin, talks about Gary Webb, and it talks about Joe Occipinti. Once again, Occipinti's name, last name is spelled O-C-C-H-I-P-I-N-T-I. And he was another investigator who stumbled upon the politically connected, CIA-connected Dominican drug smuggling cartel. And the point of this whole discussion is to emphasize the fact that drug prohibition is, once again, a huge source of largely unaccountable funding for all the charming things that the CIA does by way of fomenting terror and insurrection and coups and counter-coups and turmoil overseas that results eventually in military intervention by the United States government and NATO allies, the coalition of the bought and bribed, in order to deal with the problems that have been created by the CIA. It's one of the main assets of the Brotherhood of Darkness, the power elite, however you want to characterize that exalted clique that presumes to rule us. And at the level, the retail level of law enforcement, you've got conscientious men like Sheriff Huff here in Fayette County and many other people like him who are caught in a really untenable bind. First of all, they're required, according to the professional responsibilities that they've assumed as elected sheriff, to enforce drug laws that they may or may not agree with. And in doing so, they need to find some way of maintaining some semblance of autonomy, some semblance of institutional independence while still carrying out their mission. What he told me, Sheriff Huff, when I brought up the issue of asset forfeiture, which is another really big subject here, really big part of the subject, is that he does not, unlike some law enforcement agencies locally, I think the Payette Police Department's different, I think the Fruitland Police Department's different, and we're talking about very small towns, so if it's like that small town, imagine what it must be like in a large city, that Sheriff Huff does not look to confiscate money or automobiles for people who have personal use amounts of marijuana in their car when they're stopped for a traffic violation. He said that his threshold is 3 ounces, but if you find 3 ounces in a car, or if you find methamphetamine that's packaged in such a way that it's obviously being shipped for distribution, then he will confiscate the car and probably seize all the other assets he can find. And I said that that strikes me as something very closely akin to highway robbery, and I reminded him that back in the 1880s and 1890s, there was a fellow in Payette County by the name of William J. McConnell who founded a group called the Payette Vigilance Committee or the Payette Vigilantes. The reason why they did that was because the sheriff in Ada County, whose jurisdiction included Payette at the time, was running a highway robbery scheme. He was staging robberies of stagecoaches and rustling horses and otherwise using his office to enrich himself through outright robbery on the conveyances, the public conveyances. And I said, you know, be advised that there is a history here where sheriffs have done things that were pretty much the same kind of thing that the asset forfeiture has become in many jurisdictions. And it's created an armed resistance on the part of the population. I don't know if he quite took my meaning, but I wanted to make it clear that there are limits to what we're willing to tolerate in the realm of asset forfeiture. It got to the point, as a matter of fact, where William McConnell and his vigilantes at one point actually arrested the sheriff and put him on trial and hanged him because he'd been murdering people as part of his part of his racket. I trust it's not going to go that far in any Idaho jurisdiction anytime soon, and I think that Sheriff Huffy is not the sort of a person to become corrupt in that sense. But we did have a conversation on that front, and one of the reasons I'm going to detail discussing what we talked about with the sheriff is to encourage our listeners, if they have the opportunity to sit down with their local sheriff, with the county sheriff, you happen to be blessed to live in a jurisdiction where the sheriff has an open door policy, and he has any of the personability and candor displayed by Sheriff Huff, please take advantage of that to go in and talk to him and express your concerns to him. And focus heavily, if you can, on what he is willing to do, what your sheriff is willing to do, in order to protect your county from the corruption that the federal government specifically and the state governments often, more often than not, are promoting and profiting from. And that leads us, of course, to the subject of the impending gun grab. And Sheriff Huff is not of the opinion that there's going to be a national effort where the military will be going door-to-door in rural communities like Payette, Idaho, and demanding people's guns. I don't think that's workable. I agree with him. I don't think that that's the scenario we're likely to see in rural communities like this. It might be different in some of the larger urban areas, however, when you have people like Governor Andrew Cuomo from New York saying that confiscation is an option. We have to take that seriously. When you have so-called gun buybacks, that's a perfectly Orwellian locution. You don't buy your guns from the government, ergo they cannot buy them back from you. When you have so-called gun buybacks and turn-ins going on in major cities, these are all preludes to confiscation efforts of various kinds. There's a dim-witted representative from Iowa by the name of Dan Mubauer, who just told the Carroll, Iowa Daily Times that he believes that private ownership of semi-automatic firearms, which of course would be most firearms, private ownership should be banned. What he said is, even if you have them, I think we need to start taking them. We can't have those out there, because if they're out there, they're just going to get circulated around to the wrong people. Those guns should not be in the public's hands. There are just too many guns. So there are places where confiscation efforts are being contemplated. Dianne Feinstein, one of the chief architects of the so-called assault weapons ban, who has proposed a measure that would build upon that ill-conceived and patently unconstitutional policy. She was quoted, actually she was captured on camera in 1995, saying that if she had the means, she would simply demand that Mr. and Mrs. America turn in their guns.
And I wonder why nobody has ever challenged her. You know, she swears every time she enters the Senate to be reelected that she will uphold the Constitution. How can she make a statement that she will support and uphold the Constitution and then work to destroy the very essence of our Constitution, which is the Second Amendment? And I would simply put her on the defensive. I mean, obviously she is a liar. She certainly is not worthy to be there because she has taken an oath and she set out to violate it. And we cannot have people who are dishonest certainly serving in our Senate. We need to put people like this on the defensive and explain how they can swear to uphold the Constitution and then do everything they can to destroy it and enslave the people.
That's something that I wish would happen. I wish somebody, and once again, these people that we're talking about live behind a barricade of heavily armed people. Usually when they go out in public, they're at the middle of a flying wedge of people who have high-caliber weapons strapped to their sides beneath their suit jackets. They're talking into microphones and listening in headsets that have little curly wires coming out of their ears. These are people, in other words, who benefit from exactly the type of armed protection from which we would be deprived if their schemes were to come to fruition. In the case of Dianne Feinstein, you have somebody who has talked about the fact that she had a concealed carry permit when she was mayor of San Francisco because she was the subject of death threats that she took very seriously. So she had a concealed carry permit, and she would deny us the right to defend ourselves, if necessary, to have the means to defend ourselves.
You know, I've been thinking what we really ought to do is declare the White House a gun-free zone. So they declare it a gun-free zone, and then we would not need any guards there for the president. And certainly once we pass that law, then we would immediately remove all the guards and all the guns from the White House because we'd have nothing to worry about.
That's exactly right. On his own construction of reality, would make him probably the safest person in the known universe, because everybody knows that when you proclaim a given area a gun-free zone, some kind of mystical bubble springs up that can deflect any bullets that might be fired from without it, and can repel the presence of anybody who might intrude into that sanctified realm carrying a firearm. That seems to be at least the myth that's being peddled for public consumption, and of course their acts belie the nonsense that they're trying to feed the rest of us, because they don't live in gun-free zones. They live in heavily policed zones. In the case of Mr. Obama's two daughters, they attend a very exalted private school where there are no fewer than 12 armed guards present at all times, and they're also, of course, ringed by Secret Service agents. And Mr. Obama recently said during the course of an interview with ABC News that one of the reasons he sought a second term was so that he and his family would receive armed protection at all times, that have Secret Service protection. That's one of the perks of the presidency, and he just signed a measure that would make this a lifetime benefit for all ex-presidents. So for the rest of his natural life, whether he finishes out his second term or goes on to a third term, as at least one member of Congress wants, there's a measure that's before the House right now. It's got very little chance of passing that would repeal the 22nd Amendment. But when he leaves the White House, for the rest of his life, Mr. Obama is going to be surrounded by armed Secret Service agents. This is the same person who's setting up an administration that is visibly and obviously panting for an opportunity to deprive the rest of us of whatever firearms we've managed to acquire through our own diligence and thrift in our own efforts. And discussing with Sheriff Huff the possibility here of nationwide gun confiscation, one thing that came up in our discussion that our listeners, I hope, will pay attention to is the very real possibility that sheriff's offices will, in the next 6 months, a year, year and a half or so, find themselves in the position of increased demands from regulatory agencies, state and federal, the ATF among them, for people to be committed on mental health grounds. Because if people are committed, involuntarily committed on mental health grounds, that would serve under some of the models being discussed by Mr. Biden and his task force, that would serve as grounds for denying that person the right to keep and bear arms. There's a big push right now for the idea that the government should be taking more aggressive action to deny firearms to people who are considered to be psychologically unstable. Right now, the sheriff's office in your given county does have the authority under statute involuntarily to commit somebody to a mental health facility. If that person's involuntarily committed, then he's not going to be able to get a concealed carry permit. In a lot of places, he won't be able to buy a firearm. If he seeks out medical assistance on his own, that's something that usually doesn't show up in the database. But chances are that's going to be changing, and the county sheriff is going to have a critical role to play in this. So if you have an opportunity to discuss these issues with the county sheriff, it might be a good idea to bring this up, because I suspect that next Tuesday, one of the things we're going to hear coming out of this little controlled, contrived panel that Mr. Biden is heading is the idea that there have to be more extensive and rigorous protocols devised having to do with mental health and psychological instability as a way of keeping guns out of the wrong hands.
But, you know, I think that rather than sit back and simply accept this, we need to go on the offensive. In any debate, you never want to be put into a defensive position.
Yeah.
You want to go on the offensive, and we ought to keep hammering away at, why won't they release the videotapes that were shot at the Sandy Hook School? Why won't they release the videotapes so we can see what really happened? They have the videotapes. Why won't they release the videotapes? And we need to keep hammering away at that. I don't think we've been told the truth. Why certainly would they not release the videotapes of what happened at the Oklahoma City bombing? 167 Americans were killed there. What is the people, what are they concealing? What are they concealing? They've never released all the videotapes that were shot at the World Trade Center while those buildings came down. But specifically at Sandy Hook Elementary School, there were obviously video cameras there. We have video cameras every place in this country, and there were video cameras there. We know there were video cameras at the entrance there. And why won't they release them? And just keep asking that question. Have they told us the whole truth? Are they using this for a purpose? Who is really responsible for killing the children? How many people were there? What about all the other shooters? Why did the president, on the very day of the attack, go on, certainly at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, go on to nationwide television and talk about, certainly we've got to have to do something about this? Why did the Attorney General of the United States go with this was a local shooting, why was Attorney General Holder there? What certainty did they tell the police officers? Have any of the police officers come forward and talked about the other shooters? And basically, we need to go on the offensive with him. Yes, we stay on the defensive, we lose, we go on the offensive. Why, of course, that's the point where we're going to begin winning.
It's one of the things that Napoleon Bonaparte said. He was a brilliant tactician, although a horrible, scabrous man. But the purely defensive is doomed to defeat. There has to be an offensive element to our strategy here, and that means that we do not accept the premises being force-fed us by people who do not have our best interests in mind.
Amen to that. Well, I guess it's been... Oh, William, please get your web page out there and information on how people can get to your PayPal button.
Go to Pro Libertate. Just Google Pro Libertate and my last name, Grigg, and it'll take you right to my blog. The Pro Libertate blog, there's a PayPal button at the bottom of every essay.
And ladies and gentlemen, we support William, and we hope they will as well. He, a wonderful asset to the conservative cause. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap things up. Go right ahead.
Dr. Stan, I once again really appreciate this opportunity, and I'm very grateful to you for the help that you've given to me and my family and to many of your listeners who have been so generous. A tremendous blessing and one that figures very prominently in our prayers. We really are very grateful for everything that has been done to help us. And I'm also very appreciative of what you've done for many decades, trying to teach correct principles and to invigorate this discussion and motivate people to do something about what's happening to our country. And I really did have a very rewarding experience in talking with Sheriff Huff, and I'm really grateful to Adam Birch, my friend from here in Payette County, who arranged for this meeting. If that was his initiative, it's something he did as a conscientious citizen. He just happened to invite me to tag along to have this conversation. We have to be having those conversations. We can't really assume that any of the other officials who are involved in law enforcement are going to be willing to talk to us because none of them is elected and accountable the way that a county sheriff is. And as I've made clear in the course of our conversation this evening, I'm not entirely of an accord with Sheriff Huff on some very important issues, but on some equally important issues, I'm encouraged because he does recognize that there has been a really grave and dramatic change, a dramatic alteration in the culture of law enforcement, and that this is something that at least a handful of diligent and constitutionally serious sheriffs and peace officers are trying to fight. People like Sheriff Richard Mack. Sheriff Huff was talking about the possibility of trying to build a citizen's posse here in Payette County. That's something that would have all kinds of wonderful uses, among them search and rescue functions, which is a part of the conversation we had. That's something that the Sheriff's Department should be involved in. And as times grow more parlous and as social turmoil becomes more pronounced, that's the kind of organization that we're probably going to have to rely upon to deal with a lot of the things that are going to happen as respect for the legitimate law breaks down and people's persons and property become more imperiled. So please, if you have the opportunity to have a conversation of this sort with your local sheriff, make an appointment if you can and avail yourself of that opportunity because it's something that we need to be doing.
I agree with you totally, and I think you're fortunate. Certainly, I understand how he feels about drugs. It took me years, actually, to come around to the libertarian position and the absurdity of certainly local law enforcement or certainly being involved, unless, of course, the local people decide that they want to outlaw drugs. If they do, then the law enforcement should enforce the laws, but if they don't, then we certainly should not have the federal government here, on one hand, promoting drug use, on the other hand, taking away our freedom to prevent it. Good night. God bless.
God bless.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed the conversation with William Grigg. And basically, if you're in a position to help him, we help him, and we think he does a wonderful, wonderful job. He's got six children and a wife who he has to look after, and he has tremendous burdens. But he writes prolifically. You'll find his articles at lewrockwell.com, and you'll find his articles coming from Radio Liberty on a monthly basis, and you'll go up to my webpage, radioliberty.com, and read his recent letters. The new letter on gun confiscation is not there yet, but it will be probably in another 2 weeks. Well, this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that my ministry, Radio Liberty, is primarily listener-supported, and if you're in a position to help us, we'd love to hear from you. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, shame on you. You need to read it. If you can't afford it, go up on our webpage at RadioLiberty.com. Go to the point where it says video, scroll down to video, and it's the first video there. It's the talk from which the book came. Actually, I gave the talk, and somebody saw the video, and they said, we want to make that into a book. Will you actually write it up into a book form? And I said, well, sure, I can do that. And of course, it took me about a year to do it because we had to get all of the documentation. But I think you'll find it a fascinating story. And then, of course, it not only explains you what's really going on today, but, of course, who's behind it, and the powerful spiritual forces that are at work. People cannot understand the relationship between what's going on politically and culturally and certainly spiritually. And basically, this book has influenced many people's lives. It will give you an excellent weapon if you're in a position to buy a case of the books. It'll help us. We're about a quarter of the way towards having enough people getting the book so we can get it reprinted. And once this is done, I don't think we'll be reprinting it again. So if you'd like to get a case of Brotherhood of Darkness, and you get them for less than $2.40 a book, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, and you'll get a free DVD or a free 4-CD set we've made just to help you allay the cost of the shipping. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And we certainly hope that many of you out there will want to get the DVD, the talk that Ambassador Henry Cooper gave at our last conference on the danger of an EMP attack. And I will tell you that there have been a number of key people, head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who testified before Congress and said, it's not a matter of if we're going to have an EMP attack, it's a matter of when. Russia, China, Pakistan, Iran, certainly North Korea, Venezuela, they're all practicing and prepared for an EMP attack on the United States. And you say, if that's true, why haven't we heard about it? It's because the media is controlled and they're suppressing this. Congress, the members of the House of Representatives, voted overwhelmingly to appropriate the money so that we could have the items on hand so this could not destroy the infrastructure of our society. And it never got out of the Senate. And, of course, you've never heard about this. And basically, of course, the great tragedy as far as the EMP attack is concerned, that if we were to have this, and I've read this in at least three different books, as many as 90% of the population of America could die. 90% of the population could die as a result of an EMP attack. Certainly anybody with any illness, most of the older people would die. There'd be shortages of food and medical supplies. This would be the greatest possible catastrophe that could hit America. And have you ever noticed that America is not mentioned in biblical prophecy? Well, except perhaps in that one phrase, "Alas, Babylon, the mother of harlots." Could this be what's going to happen to America? You need to understand, and we suggest you order the talk by Ambassador Cooper. It's called EMP Attack. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, because you need to hear my talk on Agenda 21, the covert plan, population control, the covert agenda, and so many other items are available. Go to our website, RadioLiberty.com. You can listen to our programs 24 hours a day. They're live or archived. Encourage others to listen. And then we ask you, of course, to pray for America, to pray for revival, to pray for our leaders, to pray for our ministers. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Until Monday, may the Lord be with you.
To a land that's free. Let us all be grateful for a land so fair. As we raise our voices in a solemn prayer. Bless America, land.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Power Hour Radio Show. It is Friday. We made it. Somehow, some way, we made it. The 11th of January, 2013. Thank you so much for joining us, wanting to figure out what is going on amidst all the chaos and confusion. And all I can say is, with what's happening here in the United States, we better be looking at what's happening around the world. And one of those things we're going to be talking about is what's happening in China. They are stockpiling items in China now. I think we better pay attention to what China's doing. Joining me here in the studio today is Josh. Thank you, Josh, for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Joyce.
It's been a week, hasn't it?
Oh, man. Long one.
It has
long,
been
crazy week.
Up, down, and sideways.
Yes.
And, of course, it seems like Piers Morgan has sort of been a focal point of either diversion or distraction or just a focal point this week.